And welcome back to Coast to Coast. Mark Cushman with us. His works, These Are the Voyages, Season 1, Season 2, Season 3, right around the corner. We're going to come back. We'll take your calls and talk more with Mark in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back. Mark Cushman with us. We're going to take your phone calls as well as they begin to line up. Mark, I was talking about this a few weeks ago, and I am so convinced that the great comedians of the past, the Jack Bennies, the entertainments of the Ed Sullivan, the Jackie Gleasons, the Red Skeltons, Jimmy Durante, none of them would succeed today because of their age. None of them.
I think you're right. Rodney Dangerfield would be another one. Yep. I mean, he succeeded because he got no respect, and he made a joke out of that. But you're right. It's very youth-oriented, and it's a shame. We all love young talent, and but there's a lot of older talent out there that should be recognized and has a lot to offer.
Will that ever change, or is it gone?
I think it's gone. I hope I'm wrong. But we've seen this trend going on now for decades. I mean, this started back in the 1950s, probably earlier, but I was aware of it. And within the 60s especially, you remember in the 60s, it was don't trust anybody under 30. Us under 30 were saying that. <Yeah. laughs> And so it's just the media is very geared. I'm not talking about your show, but television, primetime TV, is very geared towards a young audience for the reason we discussed in the last hour about that's the most impressionable audience to sell product to. And it's always going to be that way. And sponsors know that now. They've learned that. And so they're just going to keep gearing it that way. And look who goes and sees movies. People, teenagers and people in their 20s. By the time you're 30, you're married, you got kids on the way, you don't go out to the movies anymore. So
no.
They know who they're making the movies for. They know who they're making primetime TV for. You asked me before bad shows, and I didn't give you a direct answer. I'll tell you a couple. Real Housewives. I think that's just a very negative show and gives negative values to people. And I see a lot of young people imitating the people they see on Real Housewives. But, I kind of had a feeling about this back in the heyday of Dallas. Now, there's a lot of people who love Dallas, and it's come back and it has a resurgence. But, it was being shown in 50 different countries around the world, and I was very aware of the fact that people around the world were seeing this and thinking, this is how Americans are, vain, greedy, petty, vindictive, vanity, well, maybe we are, but not to that degree. And so it wasn't really presenting America in a very positive light, yet it was selling all around the world and putting that image out there.
What is it with all these reality shows now? I mean, my gosh, you've got fishing reality shows, chasing alligators. You've got all kinds of stuff. What people are obviously watching these, or they wouldn't keep doing it.
Yeah. It's a shorter attention span. First of all, you don't have to make a great commitment. With all the bombardment of information that comes our way, I was listening to your piece just a moment ago about call George on this number, or send him a text message, and I'm thinking, George, how do you handle it?
I'm all over the place.
We have so much information coming at us from so many different directions that we learn to multitask in our thinking levels, but we don't get into subjects as deeply as we used to. We don't get into conversations as deeply, and you don't want to sit down and spend 2 hours watching a movie on TV if you can watch an episode of Cops or a fishing show or chasing alligators. It's much shorter. And this is why when I write books, there's three books just on Star Trek, 600 pages each. But when I dig into a subject, I like to dig, and I want to find out what they were thinking on each episode, what was behind this one, and what were you trying to do here, and what battles were you fighting with the network trying to get that story out. And that's what fascinates me. But in television now, I'm seeing just this trend to where, well, let's catch your attention for 15 minutes.
All right, let's go to the phones. Let's go to Thomas in La Jolla, California, to get things going. Thomas, welcome to Coast to Coast. You're on the air with us.
George Norrie, for taking my call. I
sure.
wanted to ask Mark Cushman about two television shows in the 1960s that were conspiracy related. The first show was concerning extraterrestrial infiltration. The show was called The Invaders. The second show was concerned with trauma-based mind control, and that was The Prisoner, directed by and acted by Patrick McGoohan. And they both became cult classics and spawned, like, for example, The Invaders spawned later shows such as V and The Prisoner. Well, I feel that that spawned such movies like The Bourne Identity, etc. And I was wondering if Dr. Cushman could comment on both of those shows.
Well, you're talking two shows that I loved and I used to watch religiously. The Invaders was by Quinn Martin, who also produced The Fugitive. And it came on a couple years after The Fugitive, and so it was patterned after that. A man on the run because he knows a secret and he's being hounded. So it was the same idea in that regard, but it took it into, as you said, conspiracy and so forth. I love The Prisoner. Now, The Prisoner, Patrick McGoohan did a show called Secret Agent, as you both know, which started out as Danger Man in England and came over here as Danger Man and then became Secret Agent. And when he got tired of doing the show. He'd been doing it for about 6 years, and they wanted another season. And so he said, well, let's do it this way. John Drake's going to resign. And a spy can't resign. He knows too much. And so he's going to get gassed, and he's going to wake up in a place called the Village, and he doesn't know which side is running the Village, and they're trying to get the information out of him. And so that show was a really innovative series. It's not the type of show that could have been made on American TV in the 60s. It had to come from England. But CBS was very brave in picking it up as a summer replacement in 1968.
Star Trek, was it an immediate rating success or not?
Yes. The first season of Star Trek had a 31% audience share for the entire year. I licensed all the Nielsen reports for every episode. Nobody's ever done that.
That's
huge. And for 47 years now, the media keeps saying that it was a failure on NBC because that's what they were told. Nobody's bothered to check it out. The first episode of Star Trek had a 46% audience share. 46% of the TVs in America were tuned in. And so it was NBC's number one rated Thursday night show for a good portion of that season until Dean Martin started to really kick in towards the end, and then it became their second hottest show on Thursday night. When they put it on Fridays at 8:30, it was their top-rated Friday night show, and yet they tried to cancel it. And people marched on NBC Rockefeller Plaza and NBC Burbank. They, some sources say they received 1 million letters. They didn't. They received a couple hundred thousand letters, but a lot of those were petitions, and somebody went to the trouble of counting all the names, and about 1 million people protested the fact that NBC was trying to cancel Star Trek. So they picked it up and they put it on the death slot, Friday nights 10 to 11. And it got a 27% audience share on Friday nights from 10 to 11, a show that appealed to young people, and they were out on that night. So it was very successful.
Right. What was it with all the Westerns in those days, too? Bonanza, Half Gun Wolf Travel, the Borax program. Mm-hmm. What was it with that?
You know, the wonderful thing about Westerns, and I wish we had more on now, but they are starting to make a little bit of a comeback.
Are they?
You're starting to see a few of them on some of these premium channels. And nothing gets in the way of telling the story. There's no technology to get in the way of telling the story. It's just man against man against the element. And it's really a great way to tell a story. Now, they overdid it. In the 50s and 60s, it got to one point where 40% of the TV shows on TV were Westerns for a couple years, and that was way too many. One of the better ones was Gunsmoke, which was the first adult Western. It was on Saturday nights from 10 to 11, and so no kids were watching that one, but they could tell stories that were a little darker. And here you have this marshal who's having an affair with a saloon woman. So that's something you couldn't have done at 8 o'clock at night. So that was one of the more innovative ones, and that one went for 20 seasons, 20 consecutive years on the network.
Okay, next up, let's go to Greg in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania on the wild card line. Greg, go ahead. Thanks for calling.
Hi, George. Yeah, I just wanted to say, talking about William Shatner, He actually got his start in the Twilight episodes. He played two different parts, one where he was in a diner playing around with pennies in a fortune-telling machine, and the second one he was in, he was seeing the goblin tear up the wing of an airplane, and he finally shot a bullet hole out through the airplane and almost got sucked out of the airplane. But that's where I remember seeing William Shatner first. And also wanted to say that he was the first one, him and Nichelle Nichols, was the first ones to have an interracial kiss on television, which, you know, they did a lot of innovative things on Star Trek, and I think that's why it was so popular.
Okay, and turn on your radio. And how about Wild Wild West? Remember that, Mark?
I love that show. You know, what kid growing up didn't love the Wild Wild West? That was an amazing premise. They took James Bond, put him in the Old West, and threw in a little bit of science fiction on top of it. You know, it's very imaginative series, and, you know, there's never been anything like the Wild Wild West.
All right, we have Mary now in Pasadena. Go ahead, Mary. Thanks for calling.
Hi. I just wanted to say that film and television needs to take another leap. And that leap is performance.
Okay, and Mary, I'm going to need you to take your hand away from the microphone of your phone.
Can you hear me better now?
Yeah, a little bit.
I'm so sorry. It needs to take another leap as far as performers with disabilities, but there's hardly anyone on television and film that has a disability, and it's really...
Well, now there's Michael J. Fox. He's got a disability. The kid in Breaking Bad had a disability. I don't agree with that, Mark. Do you?
No, there's a few out there, and Breaking Bad is a good example, and of course Michael J. Fox. But we certainly could see more. It's sad because you know, they're not encouraging that type of creativity from the writers in Los Angeles. It's more copycat. Let's just do the show that's most popular, and let's do an imitation of that. So it would be nice if you could see them explore those areas a little bit better. But they have touched on it, certainly.
Well, and the one thing, too, that has affected Hollywood, as you know, Mark, is budget. Because of this fragmentation, the money they used to plow into TV shows, I always remember the movie of the week that they produce. Those days are gone, aren't they?
Yeah, yeah. You know, Star Trek had a budget of $195,000 in the first year. By the third season, it was down to $175,000. But that would equate to about $1.2 million today. But a primetime one-hour TV series today actually costs about $3 million. And that's another reason why you asked a few moments ago, George, about reality shows, is they're inexpensive.
They're very cheap.
So right. You don't need a big audience because you're not putting out a lot of money.
You're not paying a lot of talent. Not that much, are you?
That's right. I mean, you know, here's another reason why the ratings were kept secretive in the 1960s is because William Shatner was one of the top paid actors in TV, and he was making $5,000 an episode.
Oh my God.
He was given a little bit of ownership in the show, but that's only going to kick in if the show survives and gets into reruns. Now you have actors that are making $1 million or more per episode. It's because the ratings gets published every week, and everybody knows if they're on a hot show, they're going to demand a raise. But with reality shows, you don't have that problem.
I bet Shatner's making more now, Mark, on his Priceline.com commercials than he was doing Star Trek.
But if it wasn't for Star Trek, he wouldn't be doing Priceline.
No, he wouldn't.
I think of Star Trek as a huge stepping stone.
Let's go to Bill. And had he not done Twilight Zone, he probably wouldn't have done Star Trek, right?
That's right. That's right.
Let's go to Bill in Tucson, Arizona, first-time caller. Bill, go ahead.
Yeah, hi. You know, with the transition from analog to digital now, the local affiliates are able to have, like, multiple outlets for programming. Now there's the MeTV and Cozy TV. How do you see that as affecting things? And are they doing well?
I don't know what the numbers are on MeTV and some of these others, but I'll tell you, I watch it. I love watching the new shows, and I'll get those on DVD usually so I can watch an entire season and just go on a marathon. And after I watch a couple of those, I'll just switch over to MeTV and fall asleep watching an old Perry Mason. And it's very soothing after you watch a Breaking Bad to watch a Perry Mason. It brings you right down.
Mark, I do a television show on the internet that you know, you can watch on your big flat screen. That's making a big inroad now too, isn't it?
Yes, I mean, technology always will, and you know, but they've tried to push some things, you know, like 3D, and 3D really hasn't taken off, and I don't know if it ever will. And it's cumbersome. It's kind of, you know, when they first started making sound movies back in the 1930s, you went from these great epic movies where it just had beautiful photography, and suddenly you're seeing a movie where two people are sitting around a table talking into a bowl of fruit because the microphone's hidden into the bowl of fruit. So it really brought production down, and it took a decade for it to get back up to where it had been before. Well, the same thing happens with some of this new technology, because now you got to shoot in 3D, and the lighting requirements are so much different, and you're restricted in so many ways. So every time you have a new bit of technology come in, it takes you backwards as far as production is concerned for a little while until you can work your way around it.
That's true, or catch up with it. Larry in Sweet Home, Oregon, you're on with us. Go ahead, Larry.
Yes, guys. I told your producer I was interested in two that I wanted to talk about, but
sure.
I thought of a third one. Way Out was one of them. I'll give you the titles of the three in case we get disconnected. Way Out was one show. Gunfighter, which was a Western, and these were, early 60s, and Gallant Men, which is a war show. Can you tell me anything about those shows, and when will they ever be on MeTV, or any other place, maybe? And some of
I doubt it, because none of them really lasted very long. I think
I don't remember
them,
any of them.
Yeah, I think Gallant Men was one season, and one of the other ones you mentioned, Gunfighter. I think that was just one season on CBS. So they didn't have enough episodes really to get a rerun package together.
What about Way Out? I didn't even hear of that one either.
No, that one I don't even know about.
No. Now, what spurred shows like Outer Limits, One Step Beyond? Was that Twilight Zone, or did they come before Twilight Zone?
Twilight Zone. And the only way Twilight Zone got on is because of Rod Serling's strength. He had won three or four Emmys at that point, three or four years in a row. And CBS went to him and said, why don't you create your own anthology series? And he wanted to do Twilight Zone. Because he knew, like Roddenberry knew with Star Trek, that the type of stories he wanted to tell, he was only going to be able to do in something like Twilight Zone. He'd written Emmy-winning things like Requiem for a Heavyweight, you know, about a boxer and so forth. Good dramas, but he wanted to do things about society. He wanted to do things about lessons that mankind has to learn. And Twilight Zone gave him that platform, and Star Trek gave Gene Roddenberry the platform to do those type of stories.
I used to like also early in the 50s, science fiction theater. Remember that?
Yeah, yeah. And you mentioned Outer Limits was a fantastic series. But again, it was an anthology. So Twilight Zone, One Step Beyond, Outer Limits were all anthologies. They didn't have recurring characters. So you have great writers like Harlan Ellison coming in for Outer Limits with Demon with a Glass Hand, starring Robert Culp and Arlene Martel, who just passed away, sadly, about 2 weeks ago. And so with Roddenberry and Star Trek, he said, well, I want to have a regular cast out there. So that was his innovation.
It's great stuff. Great stuff. And, you know, again, with science fiction theater, I'll read you some of the shows. Uncanny, because you look at it today. We'll be back with final calls in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. On our next Coast to Coast program for the first couple hours, freezing people is not easy. I kid you not. We're going to talk about cryonics. And then later on, we'll have open lines on Coast to Coast AM. We're going to come back in a moment and finish up with final phone calls here on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast Science Fiction Theater, for example. First program, April 9th, 1955. Listen to some of the shows. Traveling at three times the speed of sound. A test pilot bails out. His report, another craft was about to collide with him. when bats began colliding with skyscrapers. The Continental Air Defense Command is alerted. They fear that the radar that protects the bats from collision has somehow been cut off. A biologist and his staff test synthetic foods that have proven fatal to animals on themselves. They were way ahead of their time, Mark. I mean, it sounds like things that are really happening today.
Yeah, it does. I wish that show was around now. I wish they would put that on MeTV. Those sound fascinating.
Me too. So when you look at where TV is headed today, and the clock really can't be turned back, you still hopeful for Hollywood?
Well, I am, because some of my favorite shows are on right now, Go Call Saul. I can't wait to see that show. So there is a lot of fun stuff out there, and there is you have areas you can go that you could never go before. So that's what's hopeful. And look, we can't really do anything about the reality TV. It's just going to stick around.
It's going to stick around. Yeah,
it's cheap to make. Yeah, it's cheap to make. It doesn't take a lot of our time to watch it. I don't think it's going to go away anytime soon.
American Idol. Truly, it was a phenomenon when it came out, wasn't it?
Well, because it goes all the way back to Arthur Godfrey's Talent Scouts, and of course Ed McMahon had a show on the 1970s, was it, or 1980s, Star Search.
Mm-hmm.
And so it really has its roots in those series. But yes, it did really open up some new doors, just having the judge panel the way they did it and so forth. And look how many imitations there are of that one now.
That's true. Let's take some final phone calls here. We'll go to Jeff in Canada. Hey, Jeffrey, go ahead.
Thanks very much, George. Oh, gosh. I turned 10 in November of 1963, so I was just... Like I remember my going to see my grandmother's Philco 13-inch black and white TV in maybe 58, 59, and just being enthralled. But you were talking about the early programs, the Westerns. Do you remember The Rebel, Johnny Yuma?
Oh, yes.
You know, things like that. But, you know, Ben Casey and Ben Gazzara in Run for Your Life. But... up here in Canada, did you guys have as much infiltration or exposure to British programming like The Saint? Or one of my favorites was Patrick McGoohan in The Prisoner.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, we mentioned The Prisoner before. That came from Danger Man, which then became Secret Agent, that then became The Prisoner. And The Prisoner was meant only to last one season. It was designed to be one season. And the reason CBS picked it up here in America is because Secret Agent was so popular, they wanted another year. And he said, well, I'm not going to give you another year of Secret Agent, but I'll give you The Prisoner. And so we took it, and happily so. But yeah, we had The Saint on in America. NBC carried it.
And some of the things we do now, like channel surfing, for instance, the other night I was channel surfing, and here's a clip. I think it was from Dr. Kildare in the movie that was used in the movie with Leonardo DiCaprio, Catch Me If You Can, when he's studying how to pretend to be a doctor, you know, and just making that little pop culture reference. I, you know, just love it. So thanks a lot for those memories, you know, because it's you know. I'm just 3 years younger than George, and, you know, this is the stuff that we were raised on.
Well, we sure were. You know, looking at the Arthur Godfrey talent show, it was the number one rated show for the first couple of years that it came out, which was in 1948, right during the infancy of television. But truly amazing. It lasted so long. Then once the ratings started to go after a long time, out went the show.
Well, you know, people have always loved watching new talent being broken, and but that explains the success of the Ed Sullivan Show, which went for about a decade and a half. It was just such a great variety platform, and you probably recall, and it was frustrating to watch Ed Sullivan and a lot of the variety shows because I'd tune in to see The Doors, but I had to watch Broadway tunes being sung before I could get to light my fire. But I was being exposed to all these different types of entertainment that I wouldn't have watched otherwise. And that's why I feel bad. My son's 20 years old. And I think, you know, he's never going to know all these different layers of entertainment. And then you watch a show like America's Got Talent, and it's nice because it's bringing forward what we used to see in variety shows back in the 60s.
Yeah.
Different types of acts.
They just copied it. That's it.
Mm-hmm.
Let's go to Sharon in Oklahoma. Hey, Sharon, go ahead. Thanks for calling.
Hi. I was remembering back in the early 60s, I believe, a show called Peyton Place.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. That was huge.
I mean, my parents made us go to bed because, I mean, they thought that was, I guess, some kind of
a little risque.
Yeah. But, I mean, compared to today's stuff, no way. But I was just wondering what years that ran.
That went on, I believe, in 66, maybe 65. And it ran to about 1970. So it was on for about four seasons on ABC. But for a couple years there, they were shown it two nights a week. It was on Tuesdays and, I believe, Thursdays. It was a half-hour nighttime soap opera. And it was racy for that period of time. And it was for the adults. It was after we all went to bed, yes.
Oh, they loved it. It was the nighttime soap opera. They loved it. And it went from 64 to 69. So it had a pretty good run. Remember Dark Shadows?
Yeah, Dark Shadows. This is why I mentioned The Fugitive earlier, is The Fugitive kind of opened the doors for the anti-hero on TV. And you sure got it with Dark Shadows. You know, here we have a vampire who we feel empathy for. We like this guy. We want to like him, and he's a vampire. And we used to race home from school to see Dark Shadows. They were brilliant, programming it, I think, at around 4 in the afternoon so that kids could get home from school and catch that.
My sister used to rush home to watch that, and I had no idea what she was watching or why she was interested. Then I started watching it, and I said, hey, this is pretty good. It really took off a year after the series. That's when Barnabas Collins joined them, and it just exploded after that.
It sure did. Yeah, it was kind of struggling to find its way. I remember watching a few of the episodes before Barnabas Collins came on, and we wanted to watch it because it had eerie music, so we kept waiting for something good to happen, and finally in season two it did.
They still have, like, reunions and conventions about Dark Shadows. It lives on.
Well, and Johnny Depp did the Dark Shadows movie a couple years ago.
Yep, he sure did. Okay,
and you're seeing so many like that now anyway with all the zombie shows and the vampire shows. I mean, there's a rage out there for vampires.
We've got Tim in Indianapolis. Hey, Tim, go ahead.
Hey, George. I want to first say thank you for the work that you guys do, all the great guests you have.
But hey, you're very welcome. Thank you.
I'm only 37, but I mean, I remember when I was growing up, I would watch the older shows, and they even had a TV series for Planet of the Apes that came out after the movie, and I think that was a pretty pivotal movie. And I want to agree with your guest about, you do have a bunch of garbage that's out there nowadays, but with the more channels, you also get great shows like Ancient Aliens and shows like The Fringe, which you wouldn't be able to do in the earlier days of TV because of censorship, and they don't want the idea, you know, certain ideas out in public. And I just want to say thank you and just get your comments off air. Thanks.
Okay, you're very welcome. Well, I guess having a few channels more has opened up the door in some respect, Mark.
Yeah, I'm not complaining. You know, it's harder to find things. You know, you really have to keep your ear to the ground and, you know, read the trades or read Entertainment Weekly or something to find out what the new shows are. And so the information's out there. If you're just flipping channels, you're going to have trouble finding things. It was easy when we were young. You only had three or four channels to flip through. And TV Guide told you everything you needed to know. Now there's so many, it's hard to get that information. But, yeah, if you look for them, there's good stuff out there, no question.
Where do you get the book, These Are the Voyages? Where do we pick them up?
Oh, you can get it on Amazon, or you can go to thesearethevoyagesbooks.com, and you can get autographed copies from there.
Super. Mark Cushman, our guest, we're going to take final phone calls with him here. Of all the shows that are out there, which has been your favorite, Mark?
I would say Star Trek, if you're talking my entire
Perfect.
Life.
Yeah.
You know, that show just really, that's the show that made me want to start writing for television. I was probably about 12 when that show went on the air. And I didn't realize at first what I loved about it so much, because I'd been watching Lost in Space at the same time, And, you know, at that age, you know, if it's science fiction, I'm going to like it. But there was something about Star Trek that got under my skin. And now as a writer, I can look back at it as I wrote these books and going through all the memos from Roddenberry and his staff. And it's those themes. And by the way, when I pitched to Gene Roddenberry over at Star Trek Next Generation, I'd been working in TV for a while, and he was the only producer who ever asked me what the theme of my story was. It was very important to him.
How about that? That's
smart.
We're
going to be saying something in this story.
We've got Jeff in Birmingham, Alabama, east of the Rockies. Jeffrey, take it away.
Hey, now, in terms of Dark Shadows, very quickly, I always thought that Johnny Depp looked a little bit more like Eddie Munster than anything Jonathan.
He did.
I agree.
I don't know. It's just it's off right now. And I worry for public television because I can't keep up. I get a VHS, they go to DVD. I get a DVD, they go to Blu-ray. I pay good money on cable, but if you want to see reruns of the old Jeopardy programs, you go to Crackle. If you want to see House of Cards, you go to Netflix, wherever it is. And now that I love the David Suchet, Hercule Poirot series, and now you have to go to something called Acorn for that. It's just, you know, I'm almost hoping. And there's a part of me that would actually like to see an electromagnetic pulse, if for no other reason than to see a bunch of teenage girls see their cell phones quit and they start jumping off overpasses, right and left. I mean, it's. I mean, you could sit at a table and watch this whole balkanization of entertainment, and what's happening to journalism. You can't find, you know, my local bookstore. They won't carry Marvel anymore. I'd love to see your books in Books a Million, but some of these. Public television, they can sure carry the heck out of doo-wop, and they're rerunning some of these old dance hall type things. What was it? The
American Dance
Wonderful, Dance? Wonderful. What was that? The Lawrence Welk. They can play that, but David Suchet or the Granada Television and A&E is all about Duck This or something. I really fear for this country because, as you said earlier, we watched Apollo as a species. What can we do to at least try to get some of this back?
Well, Mark, it's being driven by what? Advertisers? What's doing
this? I hate capitalism. I'm sorry. I'm sick of this.
Yeah, it is. It's corporate greed, you know, and even PBS, which is still, you know, you find a lot of good programming there, but PBS was always safe of the ratings. They didn't have to work with the ratings, but really they do now because they do their pledge drives and they're going to put shows on that bring in the most money.
That's
so
right.
They'll do a doo-wop special for an hour, bringing back these doo-wop groups from the 50s, and they'll see that they get more donations during that hour than any other show. Well, guess what we're going to see next week? We're going to see more doo-wop. So they're being influenced by the dollar, just like everybody else.
Who was your favorite longtime talent on television?
Oh, you know, well, somebody mentioned William Shatner a moment ago, and not just because I wrote these books, but, you know, I'm remembering him from Twilight Zone. I'm remembering him from Thriller, a great episode called The Grim Reaper, where he came out of a picture and chopped him into shreds. And he had such magnificent range in the 1960s. You just knew this guy was going to be a star. But, you know, then you look at The Fugitive and you see somebody like David Janssen. I mean, they couldn't have cast that better. This guy looked
perfect.
So haunted. Just so beaten down. You know, you couldn't have gotten a better guy than that for that show. So, you know, there's a lot of them.
And he died at 48 of a heart attack, for crying out loud.
Well, I guess he really was the fugitive, wasn't he?
Yeah,
he really
he did.
Was beaten down.
He pushed himself. He pushed himself very hard. And off he goes. And I do want to take a moment before we take final calls to get your reaction to this very sad story of Robin Williams, you working out in Hollywood. What a true shock that was, Mark.
Robin Williams was an amazingly nice person. Did you ever meet him, George?
I never did. I know a lot of people who did. I never had that opportunity.
Yeah, and unfortunately, you know, and my apologies to all stand-up comics who may be listening tonight, but, you know, a lot of comedians, they need approval. They need love. I mean, you know, a lot of actors are like that. A lot of writers are like that. A lot of all of us are like that. But more so in that area, you see a lot of people from the comedy world who have been driven by those things and have had very desperate lives as a result. And Robin Williams was a very sensitive person, and he really liked to please people. But he had bouts with depression his entire life, and he just couldn't get away from it.
He had those demons, and those demons won. Providence, Rhode Island, Nelson, it's your turn on Coast to Coast. Go ahead, Nelson.
Hey, I as far as I wasn't going to talk about Robin Williams, but I just wanted to say, it seems to me like all his comedy movies, they're not just normal funny comedies. They all have a spiritual element to them or something life-affirming or, you know, not run-of-the-mill comedies, but something you can learn from and grow from and mystical elements and things. But anyway, I do have a couple of questions and a comment for you, cool guest, and a request for George. So
okay, we only have a couple minutes, so go
ahead. I know. My question is about two lost, really obscure shows. One's called, from late 60s, I think it's called The New Rebels, and they were like his hippie kids, the rebels, but set during the Civil War, rebelling, but, you know, the rebel generation, but in the Civil War.
Right.
And the other one's a children's syndicated cartoon called The Funny Company.
Mm-hmm.
And as far as disabled performers, I think there wasn't one until the 80s with Jerry Jewell on Facts of Life. She played Cousin Jerry, and now she's working on cable shows. And, you know, and she's that was, I think, the first disabled, primetime person.
You know, the New Rebels, it was right after Mod Squad broke, and Mod Squad was an instant hit, and so the very next year you saw the New Rebels, you saw the Young Lawyers, you saw the New Interns, and it was just all over the dial that they kept working in that. They knew it was the 60s, and the tail end of the 60s, and so they wanted to get 20-year-olds on TV. And so they put them in the Civil War, they put them in hospitals, everywhere you could go. That show lasted one season, though. So they found that you couldn't have a hit just because you had a young cast. You had to have something that could grab a lot of people, and Mod Squad was the big one at that time.
Absolutely. Tim in Phoenix, we won't have time. Nope, the clock has got us. Wow, this was a fast couple hours, Mark. I want to thank you for being on the program. Good luck with us. And when does These Are the Voyages Season 3 come out?
Before Thanksgiving.
Okay, let's chat a little bit about that when that rolls out, okay?
Love to. Thanks,
right.
George.
You take care of yourself. Mark Cushman, that's fascinating individual, to be sure. I didn't have time to tell you to grab our free apps, by the way. Always do that by simply going to coasttocoastam.com. We've got them for your iPhones and your Androids. Take advantage of that. Grab those apps. And you're going to love tomorrow night's program as we talk about freezing people. For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Latasur, Stephanie Smith, Chris Boros, George Knapp, and Art Bell, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.